refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. This is a Summer Breeze session, 2016. The fifth full talk. So the Buddha said that the Dharma was good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end. Good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end. And in the boundless extent of space and time, who could say where we are? When you walk the way, it is not near or far. When you walk the way, it is not near or far. Do not judge by any standard. There's a metaphor in the Genjo Koan. When a fish swims in the water, there is no end to the water, no matter how far it swims. When a fish swims in the water, there is no end to the water, no matter how far it swims. So here we are in an ocean of Dharma that we can't leap out of. And there's scenery in all directions. And so naturally we say, here I am. We position ourselves relative to the markers that we see. Here I am, because there that is. But what would happen if we stopped diligently asserting ourselves as a fish apart from the rest of the ocean? What if we put down the depth marker? I don't mean put it down, but put it down. What if we stopped so diligently measuring this versus that, here versus there? Where did the ruler come from anyway? A book? A parent? A teacher? A television show? The magazines we saw next to the register as a kid? Where did the ruler come from anyway? Ocean and fish are a mutual embrace. Ocean and fish are in mutual embrace. And that's our situation. It's like this. Inner and outer space, senses and objects, self and other. Ocean and fish are a mutual embrace. Immersed in water, it's not inside. Fish doesn't know it's inside water. It's not outside, or else it would die. And it's not in between. To ocean and fish in mutual embrace, me is included in the ocean. Not me is included in the ocean. It's all inclusive. When you walk the way, you do not see it even as you walk on it. Why do we feel the need to see it? I think these are important questions to look into. Why? What is motivating the need to see it even as we walk on it? Why do we want to know exactly where we're heading? Why do we feel that it's always better to know? It's part of our investigation. Another poem from Jane Hirschfield. Jane Hirschfield has an interesting story. She was a poet growing up and then was compelled to take up Zen practice and went to Tassajara Zen Monastery for something like 9 or 10 years and stopped writing. And she came out the other side of her training with a very different eye. This is called Against Certainty. Against certainty. There is something out in the dark that wants to correct us. Each time I think this, it answers that. Answers hard in the heart grammar's strictness. If I then say that, it too is taken away. Each time I think this, it answers that. Answers hard in the heart grammar's strictness. If I then say that, it too is taken away. Between certainty and the real, an ancient enmity. When the cat waits in the path hedge, no cell of her body is not waiting. This is how she is able so completely to disappear. I would like to enter the silence portion as she does, to live amid the great vanishing as a cat must live, one shadow fully at ease inside another. And then going back about 500 years, I want to read a koan from the Iron Flute collection. The Iron Flute is a koan collection from the Soto school that was compiled by a monk named Genro, and it's from the medieval period. I happen to think this is one of the sleeper texts of American Zen. It was published early on, and the newer version has a really ugly cover, so you wouldn't look twice at it. But it's really fantastic. The Iron Flute is reference to a very fundamental koan. Now, sometimes when I say koan, I think people who don't know think, oh, that is a riddle. That's one of those Zen stories that are supposed to frustrate you or confuse you. But actually, the koan are statements of reality. The koan are exactly direct expressions of what's going on here. And so we work with the expression, and in a way it's a portal into the Dharma that it sprang from. So the Iron Flute is a koan in itself. The koan is, how do you play the iron flute with no holes? This is about our life. How do you play the iron flute with no holes? It's a very similar principle to how do you pick up the stone on the bottom of the ocean 1,000 feet deep without getting wet. So you could keep company with that. How do I play the flute, the iron flute with no holes? This koan is called Wu Ye's Fancies. Wu Ye, a national teacher, said, if one has fancies about sages or mediocrities, even though these fancies are as fine as delicate threads, they are strong enough to pull him down into the animal kingdom. People know what fancies are? Fancy is like an embellished concept in our mind, a romantic notion, an ideal or a picture we hold of something. Tell this translation is dated. Wu Ye, a national teacher, said, if one has fancies about sages, enlightened people, teachers, what we should be like if we had got it, if one has fancies about sages or mediocrities, even though these fancies are as fine as delicate threads, even just the most subtle concept and ideal we hold, they are strong enough to pull him down into the animal kingdom. And then there's a comment by these two monks. One of them was a disciple of the teacher, so they're kind of going back and forth in argument, trying to say, okay, you brought up this point of the Dharma, now let me bring up this point, because there's no fixed principle. So I don't know which one is the student or teacher, I forgot, but Fugai says, why do you refuse the idea of sages and mediocrities? Why are you afraid of being pulled down to lower stages? A good actor never chooses between the roles. The poor one always complains of his part. Why do you refuse the idea of sages and mediocrities? Why are you afraid of being pulled down to lower stages? A good actor never chooses between the roles. The poor one always complains of his part. Genro said, if you want to clear both ideas of sages and mediocrities, you must make yourselves donkeys and horses. Do not hate enemies if you want to conquer them. If you want to clear away, transcend both ideas of sages and mediocrities, you must make yourselves donkeys and horses. Do not hate enemies if you want to conquer them. I had a friend who worked with a Rinzai teacher who gave her the koan, bring me a pile of horse shit. And it was very, very difficult for her to let go of her self-notion, her notions of sacredness and purity and the clean dignity of the Dharma, and come in and present herself like that. She couldn't let go of the idea. If you want to clear both ideas of sages and mediocrities, you must make yourselves donkeys and horses. Do not hate enemies if you want to conquer them. And then he has this lovely little poem. Sages and mediocrities, donkeys and horses, all of them pull you down. Fancies of sages and mediocrities, donkeys and horses, all of them pull you down when you hold even to the shadow of a single hair. The shadow of a single hair. That's how infinitely subtle the Dharma, that's how infinitely subtle the attachments. All of them pull you down when you hold even to the shadow of a single hair. Be good, monks. Be good, monks. Live one life at a time without dualistic inertia. Live one life at a time without dualistic inertia. Old masters know your sickness and shed tears for you. Old masters know your sickness and shed tears for you. We have all wholeheartedly engaged the way. We have all wholeheartedly engaged the way. This is a deconstructive process a whole lot of the time. A deconstructive process. I don't think this is a process where you get to be forever unruffled. There are different seasons of practice, but there's definitely the season where everything unravels. A spiritual practice that is only love, light, and cupcakes, and they're out there, is poison sweetness. It will rot our teeth. It will spoil us. The evening tea treats are so excellent, partly in contrast with the other myriad flavors of the day. If we ate those tea treats all day long, we'd get sick of them. They would lose their meaning. The beautiful and the ugly, how does that come into being? The difficult and the easy, how is that created? Okay, so I risk a cheesy metaphor. Here I go. A clam, unmoving on the ocean floor, is aggravated by unwanted, unfamiliar matters. And in not having legs to get up and go away, transforms that stimulus over time into a pearl. So the, what's it called, the people who know about ocean life, the marine biologists may know a little bit about how a pearl is created, that some sort of foreign piece of matter gets inside the clam's flesh, and in the irritation, it creates a pearl around that. The clam is aggravated by unwanted, unfamiliar matters. It transforms that stimulus over time into a pearl. I mentioned this morning, in one sense, session is designed to irritate you, to wear down our defenses, wear down the ways in which we're able, in the usual situation of life, to hold it all together. You do a session in Japan, you could hardly get 4 hours of sleep. Oftentimes the food is kind of shitty. The senior monks may not necessarily be nice to you. Session is designed to irritate you, in one sense. In one sense, working with a teacher, and you can have a broad view of what a teacher is, in one sense, working with a teacher is designed to irritate you. There are different phases of the teacher-student dance, yes. But if a teacher does not at some time challenge and call into question your fixed beliefs, call into question our self-image, doesn't help illuminate the dysfunctional strategies and attachments, I sincerely suggest that you find a new teacher. Because this person is not going to help us wake up. I'm not saying they need to be a butthole about it. I'm not saying that meanness needs to be part of the situation. Though in my experience, some of the most ruthless teachers are actually the kindest. But that's not necessarily the best thing. If this person is not going to help us wake up, what's the point? And what is love if not that? An early Zen teacher in the West, and he said something like, you Westerners don't need to go to the monastery and work with a Zen teacher. You should just get married. Broad view of what the teacher is. Dogen Zenji has a profound vow to wake us up. I want to read from Ika no Myoju, One Bright Pearl. Zhuangsha, great master Zeng Yi of Mount Zhuangsha, Fu region, China of the suffering world, used to be called Shibe. His family name was Ye. When he was a householder, he loved fishing and boating on the Nantai River, doing as fishermen do. One day at the beginning of the Xiantong era, 860 to 873, a golden-scaled fish came to him without his seeking for it, and he suddenly had the urge to leave the dusty world. All of these writings have many layers of meaning. There's a layer of the relative, the absolute, simultaneous. There's myth. So you don't take just the skin of it, but try to hear its depth. What could that mean? One day, a golden-scaled fish came to him without his seeking for it, and he suddenly had the urge to leave the dusty world. Leaving the dusty world is a phrase for renouncing the ordinary life and taking up spiritual practice full time. So he gave up his boat and went off into the mountains. He was 30 years old when he realized the precariousness of the floating world and the preciousness of the Buddha way. Then he went to Mount Zhuefeng and studied with Zhuefeng, great master Zhen Jue, endeavoring in the way day and night. One day, as he was leaving the mountain with his traveling bag to visit other monasteries to further his study, his toe hit a rock and began to bleed. In sharp pain, he suddenly had a realization and said to himself, "This body doesn't exist. Where does this pain come from?" So he went back to see Zhuefeng. Zhuefeng said, "What's with the traveling bag, Shibei?" That's his name. What are you doing? What's up? Knowing that something was up. Zhuangsha said, "No one can be fooled." This guy was getting ready to travel around and visit other teachers, but he came back. "What are you doing?" "No one can be fooled." Zhuefeng appreciated his words and said, "Who doesn't know these words, yet who else could say them?" Who doesn't know these words, yet who else could say them? Then Zhuefeng said, "Why doesn't Bei with the traveling bag go and study all over? Why don't you continue your pilgrimage?" And Zhuangsha said, "Bodhidharma didn't come to China. Hui Ke didn't go to India." We know from the records that Bodhidharma came to China and Hui Ke went to India. Zhuefeng praised this answer. Although Zhuangsha was a fisherman who had never read sutras, he focused on his intention to practice and was strongly determined. Zhuefeng saw his practice excel in the community and regarded him as an outstanding student. The coarse cotton robe Zhuangsha wore all the time was worn and tattered, so he wore a paper robe under it. He sometimes added dried mugwort grasses to cover himself. He did not study with anyone other than Zhuefeng. Thus, he acquired the capacity to inherit Zhuefeng's dharma. So monks, even in the days of China, would sometimes do rituals or make charms, perform funerals to make money. So this guy, he might have been very, very cold, very, very uncomfortable, and he didn't let that budge him off his single-minded practice. He wasn't worried about having a robe that people would like. He wasn't concerned about the cold. He didn't study with anyone other than Zhuefeng. He was really diligently, single-mindedly willing to see it through with one person. Thus, he acquired the capacity to inherit Zhuefeng's dharma. Some years after attaining the way, Zhuangsha instructed his students, saying, "The entire world of the ten directions is just one bright pearl. The entire world of the ten directions is just one bright pearl. Everything. The entire world." This was his main teaching. Once a monk asked him, "I heard that you say, the entire world of the ten directions is just one bright pearl. How can I understand this?" Zhuangsha said, "The entire world of the ten directions is just one bright pearl. What need is there for understanding?" The next day, Zhuangsha asked the monk, "The entire world of the ten directions is just one bright pearl. How do you understand this?" The monk said, "The entire world of the ten directions is just one bright pearl. What do you do with your understanding?" Zhuangsha said, "I know that you have worked out a way to get through the demon's cave on the Black Mountain." The demon's cave on the Black Mountain is a metaphor for someone who sits in emptiness or clings to the idea that there's only the present moment, everything's perfect, I don't need to do anything, nothing needs to be done, no self, no other. They don't touch that place and move on, but they stagnate there. It's called the demon's cave on the Black Mountain. Zhuangsha first spoke the words, "The entire world in the ten directions is just one bright pearl." The meaning is that the entire world in the ten directions is neither vast nor minute, neither square nor round. It is not neutral, it is not active, it is not obvious. Because it is not birth and death coming or going, it is birth and death coming and going. Birth and death meaning appearing and disappearing of the moment. Thus, past days have already left here, and the present moment starts from here. When we investigate the entire world in the 10 directions, who can see it as bits and pieces? Who can talk about it as ceaseless activity? Bits and pieces is the mind that clearly understands that this is not that. Green is not yellow. Bob is not Jim. But can we also see it as one seamless, bright pearl? The entire world in the 10 directions means that you ceaselessly chase things and make them into the self. And you chase the self and make it into things. You ceaselessly chase things and make them into the self. It's not a criticism of grasping. It means something else. And you chase the self and make it into things. When emotions arise, wisdom is pushed aside. By seeing this separation, teacher and student turn their heads and exchange their faces, unroll the great matter and harmonize their understanding. Because you chase the self and make it into things, the entire world of the 10 directions is ceaseless. Because you move ahead, you do more than distantly see the essential matter. One bright pearl is not yet a name, but an expression of understanding. It's not designating something that you're going to find if you were really good at Zazen. It's a dynamic expression. Although there have been people who thought it was only a name, one bright pearl directly experiences 10,000 years. While the entire past has not yet departed, the entire present is just now arriving. Here is the now of the body, and here is the now of the mind. This is the bright pearl. It is not limited to grass and trees here and there, or even to mountains and rivers in the universe. The monk said, "How can I understand this?" These words appear to be the monk's expression of ignorance, but the great function emerges right here, actualizing the great principle. If he was not sincere enough to know that he didn't know, he couldn't answer the question. If he was not sincere enough to know that he didn't know, he couldn't ask the question. And if he couldn't ask the question, he couldn't resolve the question. He couldn't open it up. These words appear to be the monk's expression of ignorance, but the great function emerges right here, actualizing the great principle. In expressing his understandings, Wan Sha said, "The entire world in the 10 directions is just one bright pearl. What do you do with your understanding?" These words are an expression that awakening inherits from awakening. Ancestors inherit from ancestors, and Zhuan Sha inherits from Zhuan Sha. If you do not want to inherit this expression, there may be a way to not do so. But even if you totally avoid it for a while, this expression arises all-inclusively right now. Dogen has such a compassionate view of this life. We think we can fall over the rail into an abyss of being a crummy practitioner. We think somehow we can really miss the mark. If you do not want to inherit this expression, the entire world in the 10 directions is just one bright pearl, there may be a way not to do so. But even if you totally avoid it for a while, this expression arises all-inclusively right now. It's your life. The next day, Zhuan Sha asked the monk, "The entire world of the 10 directions is just one bright pearl. How do you understand this?" This is an expression that takes up yesterday's statement and adding another layer blows it back today. His question today pushes down yesterday's nodding. So one day the teacher says, "Not a single thing exists. It's all completely a dream. Space, everywhere you look." Raising that up, that's the truth. You can verify that. The next day the teacher says, "Be utterly careful. Every single thing you do matters. You can't so much as lift a finger without altering the universe." And at that moment, that's the truth. It totally fills the universe. This play of the Dharma is only in conflict because we hold to positions. When we meet just now, it's not in opposition. The monk said, the entire world of the 10 directions is just one bright pearl. What do you do with your understanding? Dogen says, speak! This is the horse of a robber on horseback chasing the robber. An authentic Buddha speaking to you walks in the midst of various beings. Right now, turn the light inward and illuminate yourself. How many ways do you understand this? Xuan Sha said, now I know that you have worked out a way to get through the demon's cave on the Black Mountain. Now I know that you have worked out a way to get through the demon's cave on the Black Mountain. Know that the sun face and moon face have not changed since ancient times. The sun face emerges with the sun face, and the moon face emerges with the moon face. So even at the height of summer, do not say your nature is hot. Even in the height of summer, do not say your nature is hot. Well, aren't the teachings saying that we're not separate? Isn't that Tozan's teaching? When heat comes, heat kills the monk. When cold comes, be thoroughly cold. What does that mean? Even at the height of summer, and at the height of summer in Japan and China is damn hot. Even at the height of summer, do not say your nature is hot. Dogen says, the timeless thusness of this one bright pearl is boundless. Timeless thusness of this one bright pearl is boundless. That's us sitting here. Free to hear, free to think, free to move, free to experience. It is just that the entire world of the 10 directions is one bright pearl, not two and not three. The entire body is one true Dharma eye, the true body, a single phrase. The entire body is illumination. The entire body is an eye. The entire body is the entire mind. When the entire body is the entire body, there is no hindrance. That's our Zazen. When the entire body is the entire body, there is no hindrance. A gentle curving turns round and round. With the power of the bright pearl manifesting in this way, Avalokiteshvara and Maitreya see form and hear sound. Old Buddhas and new Buddhas reveal their bodies and expound Dharma. At this very moment, the bright pearl hangs in space or is sewn inside the robe. There's an old metaphor in the Lotus Sutra about the rich child who wandered around the earth with a mind of poverty, not knowing that right inside his pocket, his lapel, was a priceless pearl. But as soon as he was born, it was tucked in there, and no one ever told him. So he wandered and wandered. At this very moment, the bright pearl hangs in space or is sewn inside the robe. It is hidden under the chin or in the air. This is one bright pearl, the entire world in the 10 directions. How do you like this? Although it is sewn inside the robe, do not try to hang it outside the robe. Although it is sewn inside your robe, do not try to hang it outside the robe. Although it is hidden under your chin or in your hair, do not try to take it out. A man sewed a valuable pearl inside the clothes of a dear friend who was drunk. A dear friend always gives a valuable pearl. When a pearl is sewn inside one's clothes, one is always drunk. There's a lot of depth to that statement. When a pearl is sewn inside one's clothes, one is always drunk. This is one bright pearl, the entire world in the 10 directions. All things turning or not turning while drunk are one bright pearl. Knowing the bright pearl is one bright pearl. This is how it is with one bright pearl. This being so, although you might say, I am not a bright pearl. Wasn't that Hogan's talk yesterday? His nice performance for us? I am not a bright pearl. Although you may say, I am not a bright pearl, you should not doubt in this way. Whether you doubt it or not, such doubt comes from a limited view. However, limited views are merely limited views, the turning of the bright pearl. How lovely are one bright pearl's infinite colors and shades. Bits and pieces of its colors and shades are the function of the entire world in the 10 directions. No one can take it away or throw a tile at it in the marketplace. Do not be concerned about falling or not falling into cause and effect in the 6 paths. He's referring to the koan, Hyakujo's fox. Hyakujo's fox, essentially, the question is, does an enlightened person who's verified the truth of selflessness, of oneness, of just thisness, are they still subject to cause and effect? And Hyakujo at one time said, no, they're not. And he was reborn as a fox for infinite lifetimes. Do not be concerned about falling or not falling into cause and effect in the 6 paths. Not ignoring cause and effect from beginning to end is the face of the bright pearl, is the eye of the bright pearl. It's a really interesting koan, Hyakujo's fox. Not ignoring cause and effect, which was his answer later. He was asked again, and he said, do not ignore cause and effect. Not ignoring cause and effect from beginning to end is the face of the bright pearl, is the eye of the bright pearl. To think or not to think 100 times about what the bright pearl is or is not is like gathering and binding weeds to trap yourself. But when you clarify the body and mind as the bright pearl through the Dharma words of Zwansha, you understand that mind is not the self. When you clarify the body and mind, when you clarify this body and mind as the bright pearl through the Dharma words of Zwansha, you directly understand that mind is not the self. Who is concerned if appearing and disappearing is a bright pearl or not? He's not brushing it aside. He's saying, who is concerned if appearing and disappearing is a bright pearl or not? Even if you are concerned, that does not mean you are not the bright pearl. It is not something outside of the bright pearl that causes practice and thought. Even if you are concerned, that does not mean you are not the bright pearl. It is not something outside of the bright pearl that causes practice and thought. Therefore, your every step, forward or backward, in the demon's cave, in the black mountain, is just one bright pearl. I've been encouraging today, directly attending to the feeling sense of I am. And this is an ancient, time-honored practice. If you look, I think you'll find it in several traditions. And one of the most interesting things to me about this practice is how unenthusiastic we are about doing it. Sometimes, I think it's fear of non-existence, which is not the conclusion, by the way. It's not where we're headed. That's making a living in the black demon's cave. Sometimes I think we're afraid to look directly because we're afraid that we'll see we don't exist. It's fear of the spaciousness of our nature. Spiritual agoraphobia. But consider that actually maybe we just love our drama. Maybe we just love our drama. Maybe we actually enjoy playing the part of this isolated individual maybe in some kind of grotesque way, we're really enjoying the highs and lows of our emotional torture. I'm not talking about people in Haiti who have to eat dirt cakes for nourishment. I'm talking about us here with our, for some people, bourgeois dukkha. Maybe we just love our drama. We're enjoying it. Now, some of those interesting non-dual guys say that what's going on is that human being is just the universe evolved to become aware of itself. And that's what we are. We get all confused about meaning and this and that, where did I come from? But what's actually happening is that the universe evolved to know itself. Kind of like that. So why not have a really intense, really colorful, tortured ride? You came here to know yourself. Why not really know the whole display? It's still the bright pearl. It's still aliveness, whatever the shape. Serenity and the Zen of me, both the bright pearl. Someone told me quite endearingly, you know, I really enjoy my mind. It was a kind of confession. You know, I really enjoy my mind. And I was trying to convince them not to plan their closing remarks on the first day of session. I really enjoy my mind. I want to read an article from Onion, America's most trusted news source. And I promise you, I'm not picking on anybody here. In a way, if you think you're being picked on, it proves the point of the article. This is universal. So The Onion. Anxiety-ridden man, rightly ashamed of every single thing he does. Oakland, California. Friends and colleagues of copywriter Steve Gibula confirmed Wednesday that the anxiety-ridden 36-year-old is right to feel ashamed of every single thing he does, considering that all his acquaintances are, exactly as he fears, actively judging him at all times. Validating every feeling of remorse and social anxiety the man has ever felt, sources close to Gibula told reporters his perpetual anguish over his words and actions could not be more justified, as all of his missteps, ranging from minor lapses of politeness to his overall slightly disappointing career trajectory, are immediately perceived by those around him as evidence of his inadequacy as a human being. In quotes, Steve's the kind of guy who is forever second-guessing his behavior, as if the people in his life are constantly scrutinizing every single move he makes. And he's completely correct about that. We are, said Paula Ramirez, a co-worker, who admitted she can barely look at Gibula without a medley of his most embarrassing moments replaying in her head. Anytime he's been petrified at the thought of social interaction or obsessively re-examined something he said, his fears have been entirely reasonable, given our non-stop monitoring of his behavior. In fact, no matter what else I have going on, I always find time to think about Steve, whether it's a tiny faux pas he's made or one of the major failures in his life, Ramirez continued. I barely find time to do anything else, really. Friends and colleagues said that, just as Gibula suspected, each and every one of them is able to precisely recall numerous shameful instances in his life. From his introducing himself to someone after having already met them once, to at least three occasions in which his zipper was left down after exiting the bathroom, to that one time at the office holiday party when Karen was waving goodbye and he went in for a hug instead. Damn. In addition, hundreds of slight acquaintances who may have only encountered Gibula once or twice claimed they were able to draw clear conclusions about his entire personality from the fact that he still can't afford to drive anything better than a 2004 Hyundai Elantra. Sometimes if Steve's not around, we'll all just spend an entire afternoon picking apart everything about him, whether it's his taste in clothing or his political opinions, which are inarticulate and vague at best. Said Ted Staley, a friend who went on to mention that virtually any moment Gibula opens his mouth is a moment in which his whole character and reputation are on the line. My favorite part is getting to hear about a humiliating thing he did that I wasn't there to witness firsthand, Staley added. It's important to me to be kept in the loop about how badly he's messing up. Should I keep going? According to former classmates, even as a student, Gibula was, justifiably, always feeling humiliated, and the stupid things he regrets having done in high school and hopes are long forgotten are in fact freshly remembered by all who know him. Others may try to convince themselves that, given all the time that has passed, no one could possibly recall every minute an embarrassing thing that has happened years ago to someone else, but Steve clearly knows better, ninth grade classmate Will Anderson said. To be honest, those few times his mind has wandered back to that high school dance where he sat alone awkwardly as everyone paired off couldn't possibly match the number of times everyone else thinks about it. Hell, I haven't seen Steve in almost 20 years, and not a day goes by that I don't think about that dance. So I don't know, is there any truth to that? Is part of the problem that we secretly love our drama? That we secretly love our samsara? So as I thought about this, I thought, well, it comes down to, are we suffering? Are we suffering? We'll open it up with the eye of interdependence. How does my drama ripple out? We look around the world and we see lots of drama rippling out. Or does this fixed notion of identity keep my heart from shining free? It's not about destroying something inside or about becoming a stone Buddha. But what's the cost of identifying with a bunch of thoughts and a bunch of memories? Or what's the cost of not identifying with them, not taking responsibility for them? I want to read Mumon's Zen Warnings. Mumon's Zen Warnings, something I really like these. They're at the end of the Mumon Kan, which is the foundational book of koans. And he gave those teisho on those koans, the gateless gate, during a 90-day ongo. And he gave these Zen warnings to the practitioners before they dispersed. Because one of the ways that practice would be shaped in the old days was you would practice really hard for 90 days, like doing a 90-day session, something like this, and then you'd be free to wander. Maybe you'd go back to your home village and help out at the local temple. Maybe you'd go visit other teachers. Maybe you'd go into retreat. Maybe you'd write poems. Who knows? So this was one of the last things he said to the Sangha before they dispersed. So I mentioned that part of Zen training is taking away any fixed position we hold to. And so they say it's like running on a razor blade. Running on the razor blade of the middle way, where we don't cling to it is or it is not. And that is not something narrow, and it's not something necessarily freewheelingly wide open. So Mumon talks about that. So he has his regulations, and then a later practitioner added some comments, and I'll read those. So the first one, these are like, they're like pairs, not the comment that I'm going to read, but they're couplets. So the first couplet is, to obey the rules and regulations is to tie yourself up without a rope. To obey the rules and regulations is to tie yourself up with a without a rope. And the comment is, donkeys and tethers spring up together. To obey the rules and regulations is to tie yourself without a rope. Donkeys and tethers spring up together. And Mumon said, to act freely and without restraint is heresy and deviltry. On the other hand, to act freely, doing whatever you like in every way, is heresy and devilry. And the comment is, an ancient sickness. There seems to be no cure for the common cold. And the next comment, please act freely and without restraint. Just don't ignore the heart. Just don't act outside of the precepts, the permeable shape of the heart. To obey the rules and regulations is to tie yourself up without a rope. So we have the outer rules and regulations that a monk of that time would have had 500 rules for his deportment. But the inner rules and regulations, where did they come from? Where did the ruler about how we should be and how we should measure up, where did we get that from? I was thinking about the word should a few months ago. I realized it was very difficult to define the word should without saying should. What is the meaning of should? But it taught me to play with it. So my working definition for the mindset of should, which is the language of the inner critic, should is certainty regarding the optimum way for universe to manifest. Certainty regarding the optimum way for universe to manifest. I should be, says who? Where did that come from? Cosmo magazine? Dogen Zenji? Your father? Donkeys and tethers spring up together. And yet, to act freely, doing what you like in every way, is heresy and devilry, an ancient sickness. It's the black demon's cave, making a mess in the black demon's cave. So we may verify the truth that there is just now. There is just perfection. But that doesn't exclude the past. That doesn't exclude intelligent thought of the future. That there is just now, that we are a timeless presence, doesn't mean that the consequences of our actions won't timelessly present. The next pairs by Mumon. To be aware of the mind, making it pure and quiet, is the false Zen of silent illumination. Be aware of the mind, making it pure and quiet, is the false Zen of silent illumination. The next one is, to arbitrarily ignore causal relationships is to fall into a deep pitfall. Another translation says, subjectivity and forgetting the objective world is just falling into a deep hole. So on, to be aware of the mind, making it pure and quiet. Why is that a pitfall? Is that a deluded way of practicing? The comment says, if you still have a mind, I recommend taking a closer look. If you still have a mind, I recommend taking a closer look. To arbitrarily ignore causal relations, so the working of cause and effect, the consequences of our actions, how we're so woven into each other, to arbitrarily ignore that is to fall into a deep pitfall. The comment says, what objective world? Ouch! In this big pit, you find the claw marks of the ancestors. The next pair, to abide in absolute awakening with no darkening is to wear chains with a yoke. Another translation of that, to be absolutely clear about everything and never allow oneself to be confused is to wear chains and a kang. I guess that's a kind of those steel things around the neck. Sometimes we think we're going to get it perfect. We think that we're going to sidestep our humanity. We think we're going to get a state, a crystalline state that we can keep all the time and maintain. And in that maintaining, we fall back into the suffering of grasping and avoiding. To be absolutely clear about everything and never allow oneself to be confused is to wear chains and a kang. The commentary says, each moment is absolutely clear, clearly muddled, clearly grasping. The next comment, thinking of good and evil is being in heaven and hell. To think of good and evil is to be in heaven and hell. So to abide in the judgmental mind. And the comment says, I could think of worse places to be. The next one, having ideas about the Buddha and the Dharma is to be imprisoned inside two mountains. Sometimes they say the idea about the Buddha is about ideas about awakening, and ideas about the Dharma are ideas about cause and effect. So Buddha view would be that everything is complete, awakening is right here, nothing to do. And Dharma view would be that, no, you have to really cultivate it. And that if you do the right thing long enough, some grand thing is going to dawn for you. To have these ideas is to be imprisoned inside two iron mountains. And the commentary says, what's worse, golden chains or a short chain? Golden chains being the idea of awakening, or holding to an experience we've had, a golden chain. What's worse, golden chains or a short chain? Mumon says, becoming aware of consciousness at the instant it arises is toying with the mind. Another translation says, one who thinks he is enlightened by raising thoughts is just playing with ghosts. So what's the error there? One who thinks he is enlightened by raising thoughts is just playing with ghosts. The comment says, that ghosts arise at all proves the Great Mother. End the long haunting by seeing right through. The next line by Mumon, practicing concentration in quiet sitting is an action of devils. How do you like to hear that when we're all devils sitting here? Practicing concentration in quiet sitting is an action of devils. Another translation says, sitting blankly in Zen practice is the condition of the devil. Practicing concentration in quiet sitting is an action of devils. Commentary, in our school, not even saints get out alive. Hide your horns so as not to scare the children. And the comment on the comment, unless you wear through a zafu, you inevitably keep company with maras. Next line, if you go forward, you will lose the essence. If you go forward, you will lose the essence. If you make an effort towards realization, you could see it like that. Another translation of that says, making progress is an intellectual illusion. If you go forward, you will lose the essence. The commentary says, young romantics try to force a connection and end up more estranged. Young romantics try to force a connection and end up more estranged. Please, lose the essence. Really lose it. So if you go forward, you will lose the essence. Then he says, if you go back, you oppose the truth. Retrogression is to go against our religion. Hogen says, you can't fall out of the universe. If you go back, you oppose the truth. If you think, you backslid. If you think, you go back. retrogression is to go against our religion. The commentary says, it doesn't decrease. Therefore, karmic consciousness is boundless. It doesn't decrease. Therefore, karmic consciousness is boundless. Mumon says next, if you neither go forward nor back, you are a dead man breathing. Well, then what am I supposed to do? If you neither go forward nor back, you are a dead man breathing. Another translation says, neither to progress nor retrogress is to be merely a dead man breathing. It's running on a razor blade. Commentary says, whole villages suffocate on just this is it. Whole villages suffocate on just this is it. Genuine pilgrims mourn them and walk carefully ahead. Mumon ends by saying, tell me now, what will you do? What will you do? Make the utmost effort to attain realization completely in this life. Tell me now, what will you do? Make the utmost effort to attain realization completely in this life. Do not let yourself circulate karma forever. What will you do? Make the utmost effort to attain realization completely in this life. In the commentary, the lineage of the continuous mistake is wild and unblemished. Wherever you go, you breathe in your own fragrance. Wherever you go, you breathe in your own fragrance. Forsake gain and reputation and plumb the great matter with gusto. So we are deeply, profoundly fortunate to have the heart that would want to do this most precious thing. Please deeply cherish your entanglement in the Buddha way. We can't really get out. Please deeply cherish your entanglement in the Buddha way. And go forward with gusto. Go forward as we are, carefully.